Music City, Nashville, Tennessee. Two verses and a chorus shy of a hit song. Here they are. It's Scott and it's Hino.
And the Music Row Show.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Music Row Show. We're glad you're listening.
Yeah, we are.
Thanks for listening in. Boy, that was cool, wasn't it?
That was very cool. Very, very cool.
Wow. And this is going to be cool, too. We'd like to remind you, if you'd like to join in the conversation, go to the Music Row Show on Facebook and join in the conversation. If you have questions you'd like to ask our guest or comments,
sure,
we'd like to hear from you.
You want to heckle us? I mean,
well, take a number.
Take
a number.
Yep. You can also hit us up on, of course, Instagram after the show.
And the Twitters.
And the Twitters.
Go to the Twitters.
Exactly, although the Twitter thingy.
We're always tweeting.
We had a great week last week with the Music Row Showcase, didn't we? That was kind of cool.
We did. That was very, very cool.
And we're going to do that again next month.
Yeah. Jamie doesn't know this, but we've, for 10 years we've been bringing in awesome hit writers and producers and publishers, but we decided that once a month we're going to bring in just those folks that we see at the writers' nights that blow us away and just shine a light on them, because there's so many writers that
are awesome.
What is there? Yeah, something
that are coming up and that blow you away at those nights, right?
Yeah. That may never get.
And people who've been here for
a
long
exposure.
Time.
Exposure. Yeah.
Exactly.
So much for people. Yeah.
So we're going to do that once
a month.
I love
that you're doing that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Thanks.
Well, I might as well introduce this mystery.
Well, yeah. Why don't you? Get to it. Tell us all about that husky voice.
Yeah. hit songwriter and artist Jamie Floyd is joining us. And like so many writers and musicians in Music City, you know, held down a day job for a long, long time while she was pursuing her musical dreams. And those dreams, of course, got a kind of a turbo boost recently when artist Ashley Monroe recorded her song The Blade, making it the title cut of her album, which then went on to become a Grammy-nominated album for Best Country Album.
Mm-hmm.
And her songs have been featured on TV shows and movies, TV shows like Manson's Lost Girls and ABC's Nashville and a whole bunch of other shows. She's got a brand new project out, EP called Sunshine and Rainbows, and was recently featured in a documentary called The Last Songwriter, along with a whole bunch of other heavy hitters like Garth Brooks and Alan Shamblin, Tom Douglas, Tony Arata. So she's in some pretty rarefied company there. So that kind of tells you something about her. So we are just thrilled to be able to say, Jamie Floyd, welcome to the Music Row Show.
Yay! Yeah.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Happy to be here.
We are happy you're here. And you got a... You got a movie, too, another movie.
I do. I moved to town to be a singer, first and foremost,
yeah.
And I turned into a songwriter, and excuse me, you'll have to excuse me, everybody. I have that bug going around that everybody's got, so I'm going to try and speak up with my husky voice. but I moved here wanting to be a songwriter, and then in the last few years, I kind of found out, a trial by fire, that I am able to write for film. I'm able to write for two script for projects, and the very first one I did was Dolly Parton's Christmas movie called A Country Christmas Story.
Nice.
And I got to do that, and that was the first time I'd ever worked on a film. And then I did the Manson movie that you mentioned, and just recently there is a new movie coming out. It's my first major motion picture that I've been a part of. It's called Dog Years, and it's going to be starring Burt Reynolds.
Mm-hmm.
And Burt Reynolds, Chevy Chase, and Ariel Winter from Modern Family.
Wow.
And this is Burt's kind of like big final role of his career, and it's about his life, and kind of a story about growing old and leaving a legacy that people hang on to, and it's just a really beautiful story, and I ended up writing the whole soundtrack for that movie.
Wow.
And
that your first time writing the entire soundtrack for a movie?
So I have a co-writer on it, and his name is John Martin, and he and I have been co-writers for years, and he and I wrote everything together and sing it all together in the movie.
Including all the incidental music?
Did some of that. We did some of the cues, but mm-hmm. We wrote all of the original songs throughout the film, and we haven't seen the entire final cut yet, but it's going to be between 11 and 14 songs right
wow.
now is what it looks like. And it was so crazy.
So you have a good shot of having some of your songs being on the soundtrack album.
I think we're going to have a whole, yeah, you know, I mean, odds if we're are. Lucky, if we're lucky, right? Lucky,
yeah. How bad would you feel if only one of them made it?
Yeah. How does that work, right?
Yeah.
But we were just really, really lucky to have that happen because Burt Reynolds grew up, I'm from West Palm Beach, Florida originally.
Yeah.
And he and I went to the same high school.
No kidding.
Wow. Yeah. And so, it was just such a full circle thing, and we wrote one song thinking, you know, you turn in one song, you never get a whole soundtrack for anything. It's kind of crazy, and we turned in one song, and that turned into 18, and they pulled 14 of them, and one of the songs, actually, we wrote it one day, turned it in, and they said, we're going to write you into a scene. Can you be here in Knoxville at the airport to shoot in a couple days?
How about that?
And we drove down and we sang our song in less than 48 hours after we had written it in a scene with Burt Reynolds. And it was one of the most amazing moments of my life.
Wow.
So
that is cool.
We're so excited for everybody to see this movie. It's really moving. It's funny in parts. And Burt is a really incredible actor. He always has been.
Yeah.
But this is kind of a shown a side to him that... is just super raw, and we're just really proud of it, and I'm hoping to send him riding off into the sunset and get him all the Oscar. He's never won an Oscar, so they're really hoping that, you know, he's in the running for that with this film, and it was pretty incredible to be a part of it.
Wow.
Sweet.
Yeah.
well let's start from the very beginning.
Okay.
talk about your mom and dad. You were doomed. From the get go,
there was no other option.
There was no way that you were
going to not in your future.
No. My parents are musicians. Actually, my whole family. My mom's father, my grandfather Sonny. He was a drummer growing up, all big band stuff, and in the Navy, and playing drums. And my uncle, you know, played keyboards for Taylor Dane, was on the road with Michael Jackson. My parents are. A band in Palm Beach, and they have been for like 30 years. And so I grew up singing with them. They're still at it. Nice. You can still see them.
They're gigging tonight or else they'd be listening.
That's right. But they, you know, I grew up going to gigs with them from as little as 2 years old. We have me singing at the country clubs and stuff with them. They play a lot of the society gigs in mm-hmm. Palm Beach and the surrounding areas. So mm-hmm. there I was singing with them, and I just caught the bug. As much as they didn't want me to, they were like, no, it's so hard. It's so, yeah. You know, they knew that it was, you know, a lot of ups and downs in the music business. So
a lot of downs and downs.
But they it was great to be around that. I mean, they'd have all the equipment set up in the living room. I mean, we could get on a PA and sing and practice anytime we wanted. And it was just a really interesting childhood to have. And it really prepared me for coming here and just being ready for anything.
So I'm just curious, fly on the wall, what were family gatherings like with your with all the musicians
loud,
in the family?
Loud. The keyword being volume. No, it was amazing. Anytime I kind of live in Nashville, I haven't had a chance to go home a lot. Like you mentioned, I've waited tables for a long time to support myself and mm-hmm. this writing habit that I have. And so when I have had the chance to be home, everything ends like an 80s movie. Everybody ends singing together and holding hands and dancing and everything. So.
In slow motion. Yeah. How do you do that?
We are the world.
But everybody can pick up an instrument. And my grandfather's basement has like every instrument, a xylophone, drum kit, everything. So it was kind of cool to get down there on.
So you guys
holidays.
Are your own band. You just
pretty
everybody
much
picks up.
Oh yeah,
everything.
Everybody can sing harmony. All my aunts, uncle. I mean, everybody is musical. My sister, my brother, everybody. So
wow. So yeah. I'm trying to think. When you're 2 years old and you're getting up and singing with mom and dad.
Yeah.
What's your go-to song?
My go-to was, I was a big fan of The Wizard of Oz. So
sure.
Somewhere Over the Rainbow. Right. We have. Mm-hmm. I mean. Just baby videos of me doing that. Another one would be Annie, you know, The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. Snow White was my hero and probably still is. And so I would sing Someday My Prince Will Come. And, oh. You know, so just those are my go-tos.
There you go. That's
so
nice.
Yeah, it was sweet.
It's weird. Those were mine too.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. Yeah.
Not as
I
weird as
it.
You think. what kind of advice, you kind of touched mm-hmm. on this, but what kind of advice did you get from your folks as far as the realities of an artistic life? Because I would think that there was a greater sense of reality than mm-hmm. parents who've never lived in this world, and it's like, oh, my daughter can sing.
Oh, right. They were never stage parents. In fact, very early on, when I started doing gigs outside of the gigs that I did with them, when I started doing my own, they were always very encouraging because I clearly loved it. But at the time, you know, I loved doing it. I didn't necessarily think of it as a business, as a small child. But then I, very early on, around 11 years old, I got the attention of a label out of New York, out of Epic Records. And when that started to happen, they let me know that, you know, this is a tough thing to do. There's a lot of rejection. There's a lot of competition, and you have to love it enough to deal with all of that, mm-hmm. For a long, long time. And I was hard headed, and I was really passionate and really driven. And even back then, I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So it was great to have that advice and to have it come from people who really knew it very well. But it just kind of it prepared me as much as they possibly could. But, wow. You know, you can't prepare somebody for the kind of lessons you learn in Nashville until right. you come here and have right. it happen to you, you know. But it was great to have that foundation for sure.
So what does a record deal for an 11-year-old look like?
I mean, well, it was so funny.
What genre?
Well, was country it like music. It was a pop. It was Epic Records. The vice president of Epic Records at the time. You know, it was a pop label out of New York.
Right.
But at the time, it was when Leanne Rimes and Lila McCann mm-hmm. and Jessica Simpson and all across all genres, it was just becoming popular these younger girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, to come out, and so, they kind of were just jumping on that train, I think.
Yeah.
And I sent in. We had a connection that my uncle, who I mentioned, my uncle Rick had played for Taylor Dayne, and the vice president at Epic Records had known him ever since back in the day, and so we still had that connection. We sent in a demo tape of me like singing Leanne Rimes and Dixie Chick songs mm-hmm. to this big executive at Epic, and they heard it, and they flew us up there, and they had me record a couple songs, and they offered us a deal, and they said, we'll take you to Nashville, you know, and we'll kind of do a deal through them, and that's what we tried to do, and timing was kind of crazy. A lot of things happened, you know, all the stars kind of have to align. And at the end of our deal, they offered me a pop record deal, and I actually turned it down mm-hmm. because I always knew that country music was what I was supposed to do and where my heart was. And I just, even then I knew I couldn't be something, I can't be something that I'm not, you know, and I knew yeah. that even back then. And so, it was a great, incredible time. I wrote with all these amazing writers, but at the end of the day, I wasn't going to take a pop deal at the time.
How old were you when you turned down a pop deal?
I was 15. I was on the phone with him, and I was very, you know, I was respectful, but he was like, wow, I cannot believe you're telling me no right now. But he was like, I really respect your decision. Let's give it a go in Nashville. It was right when September 11th had happened.
Okay.
And, you know, everyone in the world, it was, I mean, no one was thinking about any of that. And it was just bad timing. So he was like, we'll give it a go in Nashville for another 6 months because you are so, you know, driven. I respect that. And we tried, and it was bad. It was the wrong timing, you know.
Yeah.
But I moved here anyway. I moved here. I spent the year that would have been my senior year. I graduated early, and I worked a job full time doing prep work in a health food kitchen in downtown Palm Beach. And I saved up all my money, like $2,000, and I moved myself here. No car, no nothing. And I got here, and here we are almost, 14 years later, 14 years this year it'll be.
How Man, awesome is that?
That is amazing. I'm
I just knew I had to be here.
I'm kind
so
of embarrassed I didn't, you know, work harder. I mean, because that's the way you do it right there.
Oh.
That's amazing.
I know.
That's amazing, really.
Well, we all have, you know, different paths. That just happened to be mine, and it really made me work for it, but it's made everything that has happened since worth what I had to, you know,
do
in the beginning to get here. So.
Absolutely.
Nice. Yeah. Let's take a break.
Yeah.
We're going to be back with...
We should probably remind folks that our sponsor this break
Oh,
is,
you know who it is.
Yes.
Main Street Productions.
That's right. A great, great video production company here in town that does... They understand broke songwriters, and they do great, great work on a, you know, not it's, superstar budget.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And a lot of it has to do with the organization beforehand and the fact that they're able to get it done in a timely fashion.
With top-notch equipment.
Top-notch
yeah.
equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you end up with something that looks great.
Yeah.
Looks and the turnaround time, I can't even tell you. I got friends who've done videos like 2 months ago.
And they're still waiting.
That are still waiting yeah. for their video. And literally You know, our experience was within days.
Yeah, we shot on a Saturday, and you had a rough cut by Monday.
And by Friday, it was showing in Europe.
Yeah,
so that's just
amazing.
Boom.
That's amazing.
They're incredible. MainStreetProductions.org. Give Fred a call. He'd love to hear from you.
We're going
to
be back with a whole lot more of Jamie Floyd here on the Music Row Show, so come on back.
You're here to win. I'm betting on it. All the right lines are burning holes in your pocket. You name the game, I am the target. But you won't ever get to finish what you started. Oh, you might be the best in town. But I hate to let you down, 'cause my heart ain't no dirty cheap casino. Ain't no 24/7 love and roulette and sun coming up, kind of you forget my bright light.
Yeah. Welcome back to the Music Row Show. That is Casino. Love that. That is awesome. Our guest is Jamie Floyd, and that's a great tune. That's the first cut off of her brand new project, Sunshine and Rainbows.
Thank you.
I like that. You wrote that with Jennifer Hansen?
I did.
And Lucille Silvas?
Lucy Silvas, two other incredible females in country music. So
yeah.
Well, I was lucky to do that.
Let's talk about that. What do you look for in a co-writer? And talk about those early days when you were starting to co-write. Do you have any great train wreck or funny stories from early on?
Well, early on, I had my first one when I was 12 or 13 with Greg Barnhill and Jim Daddario, who wrote House of Love, and Greg wrote Walk Away Joe for Trisha Yearwood, and Trisha's my favorite, my all-time favorite. And so I sit in a room with these guys who wrote the songs that, you know, made me want to move here, basically, and that was pretty surreal. We wrote, like, I don't know, 4 or 5 songs in 2 days, just pounding them out, and that was kind of first where I got the bug, you know, where I kind of knew. They told me, they were like, you can do this, you're going to be able to do this, you have something, and so I'll always remember those writes for that reason, because I thought I was a singer, but I didn't know really that I was a songwriter yet. I was a little kid, you know, and
Were you just even afraid to throw out any little word or idea?
No, you know what was crazy is I thought I was going to be, especially being in front of these guys that are legendary, and it just kind of naturally, I've always been a real sensitive person and a very emotional person, and so I naturally had a lot to say, and it turned into a song and it was easy. It was easy to just emote. And honestly, that's what I've carried through my career thus far. I tell the truth and I kind of stick with the truth. And that's kind of got me where I am.
Awesome.
But yeah, I don't have any real super funny stories or anything. Co-writers. We just, I will say though, there's a song on my EP called The People You Knew, and it was the first time I was getting to write with another one of my all-time favorite songwriters, Lori McKenna. And I'm flying to Boston, and I was going to her house, and I mean, just, I had every record of hers. I mean, even before the Fireflies came out, even before they were on Oprah and all that. And so I go to her house, and my one thing was, I want to bring in an idea that'll make Lori McKenna cry. because she has the saddest songs, you know, already. Right. And if I can do that, you know, I'm really doing it. And so I brought her in the idea for The People You Knew. And by the end of it, we were both crying. And that was a victory for me.
Yay.
And that hook is,
yay.
And that hook is when the people you know become the people you knew, which is killer.
Yeah. That is awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I knew that I just wanted to bring her something, again, that was true for me. And we sat down and just in a co-write, or if I'm writing by myself, I kind of let it start inside of me. And if it's going to affect me and if it's true for me, then there's might be a chance it might be true for somebody else, you know?
Wow.
So that's where I start.
Clearly you are not afraid to go dark in a song, which is awesome. It's been successful for you. Have any publishers along the way tried to talk you out of that?
I have to tell you something that's so funny. I've written for a lot of writers over the years. I've been signed by a lot of songwriters who have had a bunch of hits, and they've given me a chance. And I wrote for Steve Seskin, who wrote Life's a Dance, and Steve wrote Grown Men Don't Cry. And when I turned in my Schedule A to Steve, you know, all the songs I was bringing into my deal, he called me the next day and he said, oh my God, Why So Serious? And we named our company Why So Serious Music. So that's nice. The name of that catalog. And so, yeah, my publishers, honestly, they kind of, that's why they've signed me, I think, because songs like The Blade, songs like The People You Knew, I think, of course, they're amazing up-tempo songs, and I hope to continue to be a part of amazing up-tempo songs, but there's just something that is especially mine in the songs like The Blade, and I think that's what speaks to these publishers, and that's what kind of sets me apart a little bit, or I hope it does. I just have a real sense of my heart, and I try to put that into my songs, and they've appreciated that, even though they're very depressed at times, having to hear them, or very upset.
So basically, but writers, they have to make sure there's no sharp objects in the writers' rooms.
Right. Yeah.
No, they just need to make sure she catches it by the handle.
That's right.
So why don't
nicely done? There.
You're hired.
Thank you. Why don't we go ahead and play The Blade?
Yeah.
We have Jamie's been fighting a little bug, so we're gonna
instead of make it or try to croak our way through a song.
Yeah.
We'll just play one.
And it's such a great track, so let's play it. Thanks.
Your love in, I have the scar. I felt the razor against my heart. I thought we were both in all the way, but you caught it by the handle, and I caught it by the blade. Said goodbye is not the end, and if you need me, I'm still your friend. Well, that's easy for you to say, 'cause you caught it by the handle, and I caught it by.
That is awesome.
You know what's crazy is I've heard it several times this week, but on my computer.
Yeah.
But with the headphones,
Even better. Yeah.
You just.
Who played guitar on that? Or acoustic?
So Ian Fitchuk and John Green. It was just us three in the studio for that. And they kind of did musical chairs on a lot of that stuff, on the bass, on the guitar. Yeah. But John Green was doing the acoustic.
Alternating, that is cool.
Yeah.
So good.
Both of them incredible writers and musicians. So
man.
Thank you. Thanks for playing that.
Talk about... No.
Well, we were about that song. I mean, talk about writing that one.
Oh, yeah. Let's do that.
So I wrote that with Mark Beeson and Alan Shamblin, and it was our first write together, us three. I had written with both of them
so
separately.
You were kind of helping them out.
You know, I
throw them a bone.
They're going to do just fine one of these days.
Yeah,
they're really fine in their voices.
No, but they were. I was lucky enough to get in with both of them.
Yeah,
which is intimidating, as you can imagine. But we had started on some other idea, and we were kind of kicking other things around as we weren't getting anywhere with the original thing we came up with. And Alan said, "Well, you know, I heard this sermon, and the preacher said, I don't know, I think if there's a song there, the preacher said." you know, sometimes in life you catch it by the handle and sometimes you catch it by the blade. And we were all like, you know,
ooh,
oh,
yeah.
And, so we started, you know, very hours and hours of long processes of, coming up with how to use that in a song. Mm-hmm. And at first, we were going with the preacher's angle, you know, a life's lesson. Mm-hmm. And then, as we kind of argued it out and hashed it out, we got to, you know, bringing it in terms of love. And when we did that, the light bulb went off. And as soon as we got, you know, sometimes I catch it by the handle or I catch it by the blade. But as soon as we got you caught it by the handle and I caught it by the blade, we all had tears in our eyes. And that was the first thing we got. We got the hook of the song first.
You're
we had nothing
really
else.
Really into tears, aren't
I
you?
Know. I just, you know, I was like, are we all crying? Yes or no? Okay, it's worth it. Bingo. Yeah. But two grown men crying. Yes, let's proceed
Perfect.
This way.
And
my job here is done. Yeah. Mic drop. And we're done here. But. We wrote that first verse immediately. Alan said, you know, the line about I felt the razor against my heart, and they both are brilliant, and Alan just has that same kind of heart, and he threw that out there, and we were just running from there. But it took us a few writes to finish it.
Mm-hmm.
And the day we did that work tape, when it was done, I had to go right to work after, so we were rushing to get it done, to get it down. And when we did the work tape, we could all barely get through. I mean, we were all just sitting there like we had run a marathon, just like, oh my God, did that just happen? I mean, it was amazing. We felt like we had something special. And then I had to run to work and I showed all my coworkers. I was like, what do you think of this lyric? I don't know. I think this is something cool. So it was a really beautiful experience
awesome.
With those two.
And then how to get to Ashley then? Ashley Monroe.
Well, the recording of the blade that you just heard, I had done that for my record that we were making. And a few months after I had cut it, we get a call kind of out of nowhere that Ashley Monroe has heard the blade, has heard the male version. We did a demo that a guy sang.
Really?
And yeah, and I was going to do a female version, obviously, on my record, but she had heard the male version. One of her A&R people had heard it, and they sent it to her, excuse me, and they said that she wants to cut it. And, you know, she's cut everything else, but we're going to bump this or that. And, you know, we're going to make it work. And you never know what happens in those scenarios. But in final hour cuts like that, it can be great. And then it can also get your hopes up and nothing happens. So we waited and we got the call that she had cut it and that Vince Gill and Justin Ebank had produced it, which was just, I mean, that was all I needed to hear. It was amazing. And then I remember being on a gig one night, you know, a little while after that. And we saw that it was going to be the title track, which was crazy to me because the blade's the only, I mean, Ashley's an incredible songwriter, and that was the only song she didn't write on the record.
Wow.
And so to kind of call her collection of songs, that was really special to us and very surreal. And then the day that we got brought into the studio, Justin Ebank brought us in to hear it. we didn't know Miranda Lambert had sang on it. And we're sitting in the chairs, you know, all excited to hear it, the three of us. And right before he presses play, he's like, by the way, we brought Miranda Lambert in on, you know, in the other day to sing it. And then he just pressed play and we were all stunned. Like, we couldn't believe, we all didn't hear it the first time because we were just kind of stunned with the whole thing. And then he had to play it for us again so we could actually hear it because we were way too overloaded at that point.
There's a great video of Ashley singing the song, mm-hmm. where Miranda's there, uh-huh. and she's jumping because she's so giddy about singing backup on this song. It's just a phenomenal piece of work. So good for you.
I appreciate it. Good thank for you. You. Thank you. Thank you.
Let's take a break. Yeah. We're going to come back and we'll talk more, maybe listen to another track. I don't know. We got lots to talk about too. Listen to the Music Row Show.
Hello, gentlemen, stranger. Step right off the bus. I was praying for a savior, but you beat him to the punch. Got my halo report, the pearly gates are shut. Give me fire and brimstone, cause I can't get enough. Oh, the devil don't live in Georgia. He's sleeping in my bed. I won't ever get to heaven with a suitcase full of sin. And I said,
welcome back to the Music Row Show.
This song kills me.
That's The Devil Don't Live in Georgia.
It's like this old blues, you know.
Stomp.
That's Jamie Floyd, by the way, off of her Sunshine and Rainbows EP. So that was a cool vocal sound, too. It was kind of
Yeah, a little retro-y, a little bluesy. So,
did you write it with that groove, or did that come out of the production?
We wrote it only to that groove. I was writing with my friend Chad, who wrote all and created Carolina Liar, the band, out in California. And he had just a snare there in the studio. And I sang, not the vocal you're hearing there, but when we did our work tape, I literally, we hit the chord and I sang the whole song top down, just to him banging that tempo. Yeah, and we built the rest of the song around it. We just kind of went for it. So we didn't write any music. We just kind of sang the melody in those words over just banging out that groove.
I've heard people writing to tracks before, but that's about as stripped down as ever. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like very
so organic.
Yeah. And but that's how we got that melody and that's how we got that groove,
awesome.
I guess, because we didn't have to worry about anything else at first, so we were really able to get down to making it feel that good and ran with it from there.
That's so creative. You know, I mean, I
changing it up.
I just get caught up to working it out with whatever chords I know. Yeah. That's fantastic. That's a great little piece of songwriting ingenuity.
Yeah, you just gotta get out of your comfort zone or just do something that makes you think a little differently and you get something different, you know?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I'm gonna write with snare. I'm gonna wear one of Wanda Jackson's dresses.
Yeah.
With the fringe.
That's cool.
I'm gonna go kazoo, I think. I got one of those Bob Dylan kazoo holders instead of a harmonica. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a good thing.
Okay.
Yeah. You're going to love that.
Enough about us.
So.
Wow. I got a question.
Yeah.
We talk about all the time when you first come to town finding your tribe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. You're 11. How do you find a tribe when you're 11? You hanging out at Marshall Middle School?
Well, I'll tell you, I was very lucky because when I first started, I started out with the big dream, you know, with the record deal. And, you know, gave that a try and did our best. So, like I said, the stars didn't really align at that point. The time when I really found my tribe was when I had moved to Nashville, right when I had turned 18, just about there. And I had gone to Belmont for just a little while. But when I got there, within the first 2 months, I met Johnny O, who is my friend John Osborne, who is half of the Osborne brothers, Brothers Osborne, excuse me. And I met Chris Young. I met Josh Matheny. I met Brad Hill, who produced Maren Morris's record. I met all of these people within the first 2 months, and we were in the studio recording right away. So once I kind of was in those circles, I learned so much from those guys and started writing with those guys. And to this day, they're all still my people. And it's so amazing to watch them all take off and soar. And right. But I knew them all as little babies. Like, I remember when John Osborne celebrated his 21st birthday. So it's from there, from those kinds of incredibly, making those kinds of incredibly talented friends early on here, just by being, you know, at the same school, that has carried over into the rest of my career. And it's just kind of cool to watch everybody take off. So
yeah, and we've talked about that on the show a lot of times over the years. You know, people who come to town as a newbie think that they're going to jump right in and start, you know, I want to go write with Jeffrey Steele or something, you know.
Well, when I got here, everybody wanted to give Gretchen Wilson their next Red right. Woman song.
Yeah. But it's more often than not the people that are also new to town that you meet.
Yeah, you're a class of people that you come up with. You all kind of hit your same milestones in within the same years. Mm-hmm. So those people are just as important as trying to write with, you know, the people that you look up to and the Hall of Famers and everybody that you have on your wish list. But kind of really woodshedding in there with the people who are coming up with you, you never know, you know. And I gravitated to them very early on. They were just as talented that early on. So it was pretty cool.
Nice. Should we take a break?
Well, let's do it.
All right.
All right. We're going to be back with a whole lot more of Jamie Floyd here on the Music Row Show. So don't go away. Come back. Sunshine and Rainbows, the title track of her EP.
I just love that title because anytime someone's having a horrible day, how you doing? Oh, just sunshine and rainbows.
That's exactly. Just sunshine, rainbows, kittens, and candy canes, everybody.
Unicorn shooting out my, you know,
ear.
That was my thought. So
yeah. It's hard to rhyme.
I know, that. Right? Yeah.
Well, let's talk about The Last Songwriter, this documentary that's coming out, and what it talks about, which is what I believe has become the new norm for the songwriting community.
Right. So I'm a part of this documentary that's going to come out this year. And the reason I got the call is my story is not the only story like this, but when we're talking about The Blade being nominated for the Grammy, you know, the country album of the year, I was waiting tables, and I still am through all of that. And you can, the way that... things are right now for songwriters in terms of how the laws affect us and how we can do business, we're kind of unable to make a living wage even when you have a Grammy nomination. So my story kind of narrated that and kind of shows people what's actually going on. You know, you can have what some people would think, oh my gosh, you know, you're doing a, you know, and it's amazing because, you know, it is this accomplishment, but at the same time, it didn't.
I am.
I feel like I've finally got, you know, some traction. I've got some incredible things going on, and yet at the same time, I'm so grateful for all of that. But it hasn't been enough to change my daily life,
right.
And so I, you know, I'm working at the restaurant through all of this, and even through writing the Burt Reynolds soundtrack. I mean, mm-hmm. I was doing that on my nights off, you know, between my shifts, but. This documentary basically follows my story and kind of lets that narrate what's going on and happening to the new generation of songwriters. And if we don't do something about this situation in terms of people not being able to make a living, we're going to lose that next generation. You know, how are we going to support that? How are we going to? It's just important to everyone who loves music, the people who make it and the people who listen. So this documentary kind of focuses on the value of what songwriters bring to this world. And it it features some of my favorite songwriters and artists as well. But Tom Douglas and Alan Shamblin and Matresa Burke sings Strawberry Wine. And Emmylou Harris is incredible in it. And Jason Isbell and Garth Brooks, you know, signed on. And they all have incredible stories. And they talk about how songs changed their careers, as far as Emmylou Harris and Garth saying, my career wouldn't have been the same without these songwriters. It just wouldn't have been. And then you get the story from the songwriter side, where Tom Douglas and all these guys that wrote these life-changing songs, you know, and they were able to keep writing them because you know, because they could put
was,
their, you know, they
yeah,
could
it was a good
pay their bills. Yeah, they could, they could continue to pursue all of that because they were able to make a living. And the way things are going, that's not going to be the case.
No.
So this is just a way to kind of show everybody in the general public and songwriters and people who have nothing to do, you know, with the music business, what's really going on, and kind of maybe get some people on our side and help make a change in Washington, which is what our goal is.
It really kind of, that whole situation kind of gives the phrase, don't quit your day job, a whole different meaning. You know, it used to mean you suck, don't quit your day job.
Yeah.
And now it means, oh, you're awesome, but really, don't quit your day job.
You need that day job. Yeah. That is the development deal. That, you know, because there are no development deals.
Nope.
That is the pub deal, because the pub deals aren't really paying what they used to. And speaking of pub deals, you're one of the many of what I would consider the young generation or younger generation of writers that are kind of taking the publishing by the horns and leaving the traditional deals. And I'm seeing more and more amazing, talented writers doing that.
Yeah, I was very fortunate over the last several years to have quite a few different publishing deals, you know, different major situations and independent. And about 4 years ago, I decided, you know what, I'm going to see what happens if I do this myself, because I just felt like, you know, I was in a place to where I thought, you know what, nobody's going to work at this harder than me. And I'm going to get out there and I'm going to kind of, you know, take the co-writes and record the songs that truly speak to me. I'm going to kind of tune out all the rules. I'm going to just see what happens if I do this my way. And it was the very first time. I was just super lucky that, you know, the Blade happened, and then I had a bunch of film happen. And I mean, I write a lot of this film music by myself, and they come to me to write these songs. Part of that reason is because I am my own publisher, and you can deal with me very quickly, and there's no red tape, and I can get you what you need immediately, and there's just nobody to talk to but me.
right.
You know, I'm the CEO, and it's helped me in some ways, and it's been harder in other ways, because I obviously have to come up with my salary. But I think that,
minor detail,
you know, just an afterthought. But I feel like it's really forced me to boil everything down to what's most important and what's kind of quality over quantity.
Yeah.
And a lot of times when you write for a publisher, which is great, well, you know, it kind of, they kind of put you in the mill of all the co-writing and everything, but I was able to kind of step away from that and really focus in. And for me personally, that worked out very well. And I'm still pushing hard. You know, you never know down the road. But
how did you go about learning?
Doing it myself.
Because there's all kinds of ins and outs and little details that publishers deal with that most writers don't ever have to think about.
Yeah.
So how did you go about learning, oh, yeah, I need to do this, and I need to file this paper, and I need to,
From a very early age, I was a student of the business. I've always been a very, like, for a creative person, I'm very type A, and I'm very focused, and I'm very driven. And so, by necessity, you know, I early on studied everything I could. And then when I was at all these major publishers, I kind of, you know, absorbed everything I possibly could.
Okay.
And then, you know, when it came time for me to do it myself, I just kind of used everything that I had learned. And what I didn't learn, I reached out to trusted friends of mine in the industry that I had made, you know, over the years.
Sure.
You network with not just songwriters, you network with everybody here.
Sure.
And so I was able to reach out and had really great resources. And I just took care of things. And that's the other thing that's really important if you're in business for yourself or just as a songwriter in general, being really timely with people and getting them what they need quickly really bodes well for you know, being invited onto projects and just it's your reputation. So I've been very careful to make sure that the people know that if you're going to work with me, I'm going to get it done. You know,
that's very important.
But that's yeah. You certainly have to have that, whether you're working for yourself or working for a publisher. You really should be able to deliver when expected. That always people tend to respond well to that. So I've always made that a cornerstone of my business.
Is it funny how often people are surprised by how quickly you get it to them?
I'm telling you, Ashley was playing on The Blade on a major television show, and they reached out directly to me because I'm the license holder on one third of the song. Mm-hmm. And I that day, of course, I sent the paperwork right back, and they were like, "You are the fastest person we've ever dealt with. This never happens." And so, but that's good, you know, because if people kind of get wind that that's how it is to deal with you, that's always a good thing. So, So I think everybody starting out, whether you're a brand new songwriter, you've been in it for a long time, the more you know, the more you can be savvy about your own business. You should know what's going on in your career. Sure. So that's what I've tried to do.
How do we find you on the interwebs?
Well, a good central point is officialjamiefloyd.com, and you can find me on Facebook.com/JamieFloydMusic, Instagram, Jamie Floyd. I'm all over.
And The Last Songwriter, be looking for that on...
Be looking for that this year. It should... We're maybe looking at a few months that you'll either see it on TV or in... excuse me, in a theater yep. near you,
and
a film
that,
festival.
Hopefully streaming. You know?
Yeah, that's yep. right. Mm-hmm. Yep. The other film is Dog Years coming out to theaters. It looks like this summer.
Dog Years.
Sorry, okay. I know yeah. it's hard to.
And everybody needs to go out to their iTunes or wherever they buy music and go get Sunshine and Rainbows.
I would
it
so appreciate
really
it.
It's really good. It really
it is.
Well,
it's excellent. It's excellent.
Thank
awesome.
You for having
well,
thank
me.
Thank
you
so
here.
Much. And,
honored
well,
to be here.
Well, this is another couple hours has flown by. Thanks so much for tuning into the Music Row Show. Go check out our website, and we'll see you next time. Strong heart.